Named after the mechanism that separates the sweet wort from the spent grain, False Bottom Girls helps you filter through the wonderful yet sometimes confusing world of beer.
Hey, I'm Rachel Hudson, head brewer and co-owner of Pilot Brewing and an advanced cicerone.
Hi, I'm Jen Blair, master cicerone, home brewer, and sensory expert. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of False Bottom Girls. This is a very special episode for us because we have very special guests from Jasper Yeast today. And Jasper Yeast is our first, and I was going to say first and newest, but you're our very first sponsor for the podcast. So we wanted to have you all on today to talk to us about Jasper Yeast. I know Rachel and Pilot use your products, and we're very excited to have you all on and for our listeners to learn more about Jasper Yeast. So Rachel, I'm going to kick it over to you to get us started.
Thank you. And thank you for this partnership with you guys. You know, if you've been listening to our podcast for a long time now, which, gosh, what have we been doing it for, almost 5.5 years or something ridiculous like that? We have, you know, really had a slow growth and haven't really taken on much of on the next thing in our podcast until now. Really wanted to bring on a sponsor, and it didn't make sense for us to just like kind of reach out to all, you know, there's a lot of big suppliers out there, but we don't really, at Pilot, it made more sense to reach out to someone that we're using a lot of their product. We use a lot of Jasper yeast at Pilot, probably everything on a big batch scale as just our small little production half barrel batches we don't use, but hopefully that will change. So we're excited to introduce you guys to Travis and Jasper from Jasper Yeast. I'm going to turn it over to them because I want them to, you know, tell you a little bit about themselves and why they wanted to start Jasper Yeast. Go ahead, guys. Take it away. It's your first podcast spotlight with us, you know, no presh.
paid partnership. Jasper, you can start if you want. Talk a little bit about how you got started.
Yeah. I mean, so both Travis and I got our starts in the brewing industry quite a while ago. Myself, I have a background in microbiology. I did some research. I had science career, and I'm from the Netherlands originally. Moved to the United States in 2007. Worked at a research institute for a while, and then decided to kind of do something, you know, like more hands-on, and joined a brewery, set up their quality control lab. That was Los Rhino Brewing Company, and then became the head brewer there. But always in the back of my mind, I always wanted to do something with yeast. I isolated my own strains. I was already doing that in the Netherlands and brewing beer with them. And then through Fabio Garcia that I used to work with, he knew somebody else. And then that person knew Travis. And then they were like, oh, you guys should get together because both of you have the similar ideas of doing something with more with yeast. And then we got talking, and there's definitely a need for high quality liquid cultures, but also the people behind it that know exactly what brewing is, like the science behind it, but also for the microbiology, so to speak, and to help people, you know, that to play that extra part. And so both Travis and I kind of came from different directions, but with the same goal, and you know, that clicked really well. And we decided to go pro, basically. What do you think, Travis? What do you have to say?
Yeah, that's definitely how we got started, how we met. I don't have a traditional science background. I have the more traditional homebrewing background, getting my my toes wet in the industry via a hobby. Jasper did that, I think, in the Netherlands, and obviously quite a lot here. Before you're helping Fabio out, you're a member of homebrew clubs, things like that. I did some homebrewing in college, and actually my parents did some homebrewing in the 90s. I recall my dad having one of the carboys clogged up and it exploded in the closet. And that was the last time Bob Chedrow was allowed to homebrew at our house. So I was aware of it, and it was a fun hobby. I bought a kit and kept in the back of my mind. I worked some other jobs, and then I decided to fulfill my young person dream of being unemployed in Portland, Oregon. So I moved out there. It was very easy to not have a job there, actually. It was a pretty competitive for even entry-level gigs out there. But I got an internship and decided it was pretty expensive to live out there for minimum wage. Did the Siebel Brewing Program in Chicago and then came back to the D.C. area. Got a job at Capital City Brewing Companies, a larger brew pub group in Baltimore, Maryland, and D.C. Working there, and then it was the early years of that gig that, Jasper and I met. We were both obviously interested in getting more involved in the industry. A lot of breweries were on the cusp of opening, and I was purchasing from a number of West Coast labs, and I thought, well, you know, it seemed like there's an opportunity, obviously maybe to open a brewery, but also potentially become a vendor or supplier. And, you know, that's what we did. Like Jasper said, obviously we both put in a lot of time working in breweries before we opened the lab to gain a lot of experience. So one thing we pride ourselves on is ability to troubleshoot, offer some unique ideas, or make recommendations. You know, that's the fun part of the job is it sounds cliche that it's just customer service, but that's really the fun part. You know, getting involved with brewers' projects. I always joke, I talk to a lot more brewers now in the lab than when I was ever brewing, because you're a little bit in your basement, in your brewery cave, working on a brew. And what we're doing is obviously trying to reach out to people and work with people on projects. So yeah, it's quite a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that's how we met, was the collaboration with the Charlotte breweries that was brewed at the Beervana location of like with that. So we did with like, who was it? Divine Barrel and Salute. And there was Pilot, Wooden Robot, maybe someone else. I can't remember. And then we used Jasper Yeast.
That's right. Yeah.
That's exactly how I met you guys.
Josh went down there.
Yes,
that is who I met. And then I started getting into you guys, you know, looking into and making some switches up. And that's exactly right. So
the recording of that collab, is that still available on Amazon Prime? They did some kind of documentary, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
I think it is.
I don't know if I ever saw it.
Yeah.
I saw a couple of shots.
I remember seeing
Josh, like walking like with his long wavy hair.
But yeah, I think
if you
we
post a video of this, you need to like pan to that image of Josh.
Yeah.
What you both said is so important, that you don't see all the time with the supply side of suppliers having that in-depth knowledge of brewing and being able to troubleshoot. Like I used to work on the malt side with craft maltsters, and there were a lot, or I shouldn't say a lot, there were a handful who would kind of get started malting and then say, okay, how do I sell my malt? Or like, how do I talk to brewers? And my first advice was always like, you need to go buy a homebrew kit or join a homebrew club. You know, you need to learn about beer because you're trying to sell a specialty product, and you need to be able to tell the brewers how to use it, because you're not going to be able to use it the same way you're using, you know, like the two row that you're buying in, you know, in like in bulk. So I love when I hear suppliers say like, yes, we were in brewing, and if somebody calls, you know, mm-hmm. they're going to be confident that you all are going to be able to help them troubleshoot or make suggestions and kind of walk them through, you know, what differentiates your product.
Yeah, especially because brewers can be quick sometimes to blame the ingredients when 99% of the time it's probably not the ingredients. You know, and that comes with a learning curve of learning how to be a good brewer.
You saying
too.
That. We need that blurb. Yeah. That way, if we can have
say
that video.
Again.
That, yeah.
Don't worry. We're recording this. So it's all been recorded.
Okay.
I mean,
get you a snippet.
And there's like a lot of things that can go wrong, you know. And like the thing is with the yeast, it's like the last thing you add. So until then, everything went well. And now, you know, what's going on? Yeah, that happens. That also makes it fun, because then when something like that happens, it's the time that people reach out. Because when it all goes well, you know, then obviously you don't need to contact your vendor. So then it's also nice, because then at that point, we were just on a call actually like half an hour ago with somebody who ran into an issue, and then we can help them out, you know, and that's just important, because nobody's perfect. Things go wrong all the time, especially in breweries. Because it's everybody wears like 10 million hats and has to know everything, and that's just impossible. So Yeah.
Yep. And there's a lot of pressure to get beer out on time and reuse yeast to save money. And you got to know the limitations that come with that. And it can take a long time to, you know, a lot of brewers start out the way I did, where you just learn what to do and the why comes later, you know? So it is very important.
Yeah, it's sometimes miss the days of having issues, but not being, not having the buck stop somewhere above your head, because it was just a learning experience, right? Yeah. The glycol chiller goes down and now you have a technician coming in. And I remember you can just follow that person and learn a little bit, because when everything's working properly, you know, the reality is you're not learning too much. You're just going through the motions of everything is functioning properly. But when there's an issue, you know, the optimistic version of that is, okay, well, we're going to learn something from this. Obviously, it can be critical and costly. And so if you're the business owner like yourself, the attraction of like, hey, I got to figure out how to do X, Y, Z, or I had to do it because I didn't want to pay somebody, is more stressful. But the fact remains, it is, you know, helpful when you decide to, hey, figure out what's going on or troubleshoot, or I'll do half this job so that it won't cost quite as much. I think a lot of brewers do enjoy that part of it. Maybe not when things are stalled and can't get things going, but by the end of it, and if you resolve it, you say, hey, okay, put that in your pocket for next time. I now learned a new trick for getting things started, for example. Yeah.
Oh, that's the least you can do is learn something if you make a mistake, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because I mean, it's that's what it's all about, is learning how to not do it again, make the mistake again. But yeah, from a brewer side, it was easy to work with you. From a brewer and an owner side, it was definitely easy to work with you. One, you're semi-local to us. Two, the price is right, man. You guys do a good job there, and I appreciate that. Don't you go straying off that. I do recommend you guys a lot.
Yeah, we never increased our prices. So basically, what was it again? What did you say, Travis? Like, you had a slogan, like
prices just like the 2014, it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah, we know how it is.
Nobody would blame you if you.
Yeah, I mean, like, the worst thing is that, you know, you're brewing and you have the feeling that you're being raked over the coals. So one, besides keeping our prices affordable, we're also actively helping people reuse the yeast, you know, so which sounds very counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Because people think like, oh my gosh, why would you do this? Don't you want somebody to use the pitch only once and then buy again? That doesn't make any sense for brewers. So we put a lot of effort in that as well. And we actually, you know, sell the equipment that you for storage of yeast for a price that we don't make any profit on it. So at cost, we sell that just to get people, help people, you know, do that. And I also personally feel, and Travis as well, that by reusing yeast, you get to know the strains a lot better. So it's, and sometimes you you buy a pitch, you ferment one time, and then the yeast really gets used to your system, and then the fermentations would go better and better.
And that's really great too, to build that trust with your customers, that, you know, they understand that, like you said, you're not just like, well, you can't really reuse this yeast. You need to buy a fresh pitch every time, you know, like saying like, yes, let us help you learn how to work with our yeast over time has to build a lot of trust between you and your customers.
They're very available. They're very easy to communicate with, as a, you know, just coming from a standpoint of being a brewer and ordering stuff, it makes it very easy for me to, I can just be like, I need this. Is this possible? And I don't have to like go through a ordering website that takes 5 minutes to load or makes me want to do 10 different steps. You know, I know that comes with, you know, being a smaller company, but I appreciate it. I think it makes it easy.
Yeah. We like to, you know, even with growing, we still like to keep that personal side and you know, directly respond to inquiries, and yeah, it's helpful. On the reusing yeast thing, I don't know what your experience is, Rachel, but we still surprisingly run into a lot of breweries that don't repitch yeast or have been trained in a format where they're told not to, or that there's too many risks. So some of the things that we learned long ago are new, valuable information, and still new to somebody else because they've never done it, never tried it. So we have a couple of videos that we put, not professionally produced, but on YouTube, that we put together, and a couple articles on our website just talking about how to harvest, how to repitch, and demystify that for people that have no experience doing it. Yeah. Everybody reuse the yeast that you talk to, or most everybody that you know is reusing yeast, Rachel?
most brewers I know reuse yeast. I'm probably the one that reuses it the least, just because we are so small. Like, I don't necessarily have like a beer for it. But I definitely 100% reuse it when I can. And a lot of us share yeast too. Like, I have taken yeast from town. They just had some they weren't going to reuse. And they've taken yeast from Wooden Robot. Like, eventually there's going to be a Charlotte strain just cultivating around here. But we'll do that from time to time, because it's just, you know, why not? Like, if we have yeast that we're not going to use, it might as well let someone else use it if they want to. And I've had great success with it. And so, no, there's a lot of reusing and harvesting. I never grew up in an environment being taught to not do that. All the breweries I've worked for have very much done that and been on more of a core brand schedule than we have.
I think, just about to say, I think that's a very an American thing. I feel like if you go, I mean, maybe in the UK as well a little bit, but what I've seen for continental Europe, there's a lot of like a one and done going on. It kind of depends where you are in the world, for sure. Yeah,
I would have thought opposite. I just would have thought there's so much more history and, you know, culture there, just so much older than America. That's really interesting. Very curious. Do you have any insight as to why they choose to?
I don't know about whole Europe. So,
for sure.
A little bit. And, like, you know, some people might have a different idea. I know the most about the Netherlands, and I do know that there's a lot of one and done, like one time usage. I think it's also because the Netherlands went through a kind of a similar, although there was no prohibition in the Netherlands, but, you know, the market got consolidated between, like, and in the end there was only yellow fizzy lager of, like, not the greatest quality. And then, like, the craft beer boom came. And then, there were, you know, just, it went a little faster than in the U.S. So I think people just didn't know. They weren't really trained to do that. So there was a lot of breweries.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, just pour it in and then, you know, this goes and then what's next? You know, kind of like a homebrewer maybe looks at it, like, which is obviously good if you're a homebrewer, because you can use all these different strains, different recipes. So you don't really think about it commercially. Maybe that's a reason.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And maybe they're not making a lot of beer one after another, like small place. Yeah.
That is the challenge for a lot of breweries, is just, like you said, managing multiple strains. And so sometimes a good yeast program turns into using fewer yeast strains, because, like, well, I'm going to do a really good job managing this ale and this lager, and they're trying to get numerous generations so they don't have as much room to experiment, things like that. I don't know, when we went to the UK a couple of years ago, and it seemed like the craft industry, there's obviously traditional historical brewing there, but on the craft side, a little bit younger. So just not as many years working in a craft brew environment. The irony is that the craft beer thing seems to be a little bit more mature, bigger, a little better funded in the United States. Obviously, there's pockets of inexperience, newness, but in general, there might be a bit more information in the organized, you know, CBC, MBAA, more technical groups to learn more if you want to, maybe, than some of these smaller countries that it's still growing like it was in the craft industry 10 years ago. It was 10% a year. I don't know what the numbers are, but it might be on the more infant side of the industry than our mature version.
No, yeah, for sure. Like, in my experience traveling, most countries, or even like judging, like in Africa last year, they used the BJCP guidelines for judging beer, because, you know, who else is making guidelines besides maybe that one and the Brewers Association? So you probably are right about that. But there are, like, you're right, there's like the big mass produced lagers breweries, and then there's like the small craft brew breweries who have opened up in the respective countries. And there are a lot of Americanized styles, you know, that you'll see them brewing over there. Black IPAs, hazy IPAs, like all over the place, kind of.
Where did you go to judge?
African Beer Cup last May in Cape Town, South Africa. And it was a competition for all Africa, the whole continent. Yeah, I'm going back this year, and Jen's going with me. So we're pretty excited. Yeah. It is a good time.
Next time, invite me too, okay? I've done World Beer Cup and GABF.
No,
because I always wanted to go.
I'll send you the contact for the organizer. She'd be happy to Yeah, no, it's awesome. It's a really good time
for like a poor person, you know.
Yeah,
I can carry the bags.
I'll be there. Don't do anything.
Yeah,
I love it. So, let's talk a little bit. Like, you know, we use a lot of stuff from you guys at Pilot. We use everything. But, you know, kind of like, what else do you guys want people to know about your yeast on a professional brewer side to start? Maybe like, is it available nationwide? I mean, worldwide? I think you guys have some customers and outside the United States. Can you just talk about a little bit about like that?
We ship worldwide. And actually, we use FedEx, FedEx International Priority Express, and it goes really well. I mean, and we pack it really well, so we have double insulation. So the and then everything is liquid, so we do not do dry yeast. We believe very heavily in the healthy, you know, liquid yeast that is ready to go immediately without hydrating and other things. And yeah, so we do that, and we've done it successfully to Europe. We have many clients over there, and we ship to Asia. And
wow,
no problem.
I can
there.
Attest to the shipping quality. For sure.
Yeah.
Never had any issues.
Yeah.
And then for international, we actually have like another insulation layer that we put in. And then it's, I mean, we tested it. We put like a temperature probe and we put it into our warm room, which is 92 degrees, which we use for bacterial, like to see if things are bacterially contaminated or wild yeast. And then what we noticed is like, I think it's like 4 days it stays under, 10 degrees C, which is, gosh, now I have to think about Fahrenheit. I don't really. It's probably like
40-ish. 48.
Yeah.
Is that right?
20 is 60. So I know that.
Upper 40s. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty good, you know. So
yeah.
And we ship everything with feeders, so when the yeast arrives, you can feed it immediately to get like an extra week or so of like super healthy super healthy and active yeast. And yeah, so we're proud of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have our listeners worldwide too. So order up, guys.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Travis.
And on the domestic side, I think that sometimes we get associated with being so local that people don't know that we're shipping anywhere in the continental US as well. And we use FedEx and Priority. It can be anywhere domestically by 9:30 the next morning, which is really impressive. And we have really good prices on shipping too. I don't want to always talk about pricing like that's the reason, but you know, with interesting times in the industry, it's obviously something when I was purchasing that I would look at. It's like, well, the shipping cost is more than 20% of the price of this thing. That seems like quite a lot. So, you know, we try to any savings that we get by being a good customer, we try to pass on and hope that that makes a difference when people are ordering.
I believe it does. I mean, I speak for myself only, but it's not just about that either. Like, it is really great quality yeast, and it's really great customer service, and kind of got to have everything these days, you know? Like, honestly, in theory, you know, I think as brewers, sometimes professional brewers, you get so stuck with in your head, you're like, well, I've been brewing the same beer with the same yeast. Do I really want to switch things up? And sometimes parameters force you to. For one reason or another, but it can be a little bit of a mental hump to switch something that's doing really well for you. But I have, you know, I didn't always use Jasper yeast, obviously, and I have made switches here and there for one reason or other over my career. But it's not, you know, at the end of the day, these strains are pretty much cultivated from the same place. Yeah. Like, no matter who the supplier is, would that be true or am I off there?
Well, I mean, there's if you look, for example, at Chico, what is it, American Ale One or whatever other labs are calling it, most of the labs have similar variants of that, and there might be some slight differences, you know, but yeah, most of those are the same. We do carry some strains that we that are like unique to us. Yeah, so we do that as well. We have a. Just to throw a couple out there, we have a Dutch lager strain, which is really nice that we put on the market not that long ago. We're working on a new set of lager strains that we're going to come out with, some really interesting ones that we're going to come out over the next couple of weeks. We have a style strain that is not genetically modified, that has, produces a very nice balanced but still very strong style character that's not really overly sulfury. Travis, what do you think? Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, you know, it's not particularly new, but it's still good to remind folks that it's a good option. The seltzer yeast and nutrient that we put out there,
yeah,
that's really become an important part of our portfolio, as seltzer production has been something that breweries are legally allowed to produce since they're not distilleries and they can't just purchase spirits and blend it down. It's quite an interesting fermentation because, as you know, just sugar water doesn't have all the trace nutrients and mineral content that's needed for proper fermentation. So it was a big project for us that we're very proud of. But also it the amount of sales that we do with that is indicative of how important it is for breweries to have those options, whether they're flavoring them, something neutral. Some breweries are making a higher gravity seltzer that they're blending down to be more efficient. And I think that, as you know, we've been in the industry for now close to 2 decades, and we're seeing trends. And now it was a weird thinking about, now I'm just over 2 whole legal drinkers age now. It's bizarre to think about. So there's a whole other, you know, generation of beer consumer or beverage consumer that beer might just be one thing of many. So trying to keep up with that. And I think seltzer is a great way for brewers and for us to be relevant, throw a bigger net in your tap room or on your, you know, P-mix of things for distributor. So I don't see that going away. I know it didn't burst, but it was a lot of people were into it, and then it pulled back a little bit. But I think for small breweries, it's a great option. And what we have clarifies naturally, very neutral flavor. I don't know if you've ever tried it. Have you?
I don't even think I knew you had it. I mean, this is a really good episode for me.
Yeah. You know, I'll drink one. It's something different, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a really difficult fermentation normally, you know, because yeast has, like Travis said, yeast needs all these essential ingredients to be there to finish a fermentation. But not only that, because the end product for beer, you want flavor, you want color, you want something. And seltzer, you don't want anything. So you want low pH, colorless, nothing left behind. So it's like this perfect, it needs to just like all the nutrients have to be taken up by the yeast and everything's done, fermentation done, and then boom, clear, no color, nothing. And that was really hard to dial in. He did like more than 600 or 700 test fermentations just to dial that in. And like the tiniest, like minute changes in water hardness. It's incredible what the effect can be. So we did all the calculations, we do everything. So if, so just to also take that off the plate for the brewer, so they can just tell us, okay, this is my water. Water hardness is important, and this is how much I'm going to make. This is the sugar, so much, like this bricks or Play-Doh that I'm aiming for, and then we can constitute it perfectly for that. Yeah,
that's an incredible amount of testing. Is that like what kind? If you were to do a new yeast strain, how many test batches do you think you normally go through to like kind of perfect it?
So
like brewer's yeast, I guess.
Yeah. So we've done some isolation. So we have a couple of historic strains that we were able to get. So we have a British strain that we got from a bottle of Bath King's Ale from, I think it was 1906. I think it was, that we were able to revive a strain out of. We have a strain from a lager, an American lager from the 40s. And then what we do is like, first thing we do is we grow it, and then we do a fermentation, a very small scale, like a liter, just to see if it actually can ferment. But sometimes, you can imagine if you have these strains that you isolate or that are new, that you don't know anything about, does it actually work? You know, some of them might not really ferment really well. So we do that, and if that goes well, then we do like, I would say 10 different tests to see how it works out. And in the end, we step it up bigger and bigger. And then we ask a friendly brewer, like, hey, we have this strain, you know, would you mind running a test batch with it? You know, like a small scale, say 5 barrels or so. And then you just use it and tell us what you think. And then, you know, we do that. And if that's successful, And we have more data on like attenuation and all that good stuff and all the temperature stuff that we do on our end. Then we can see how it handles in the brewery, and then, you know, then it's basically ready to put on the market. Yeah. So it takes time. I would say like 10 to 20 test fermentations, but much less than the seltzer, because the seltzer, I mean, there's so many ingredients that go in, and then we had to figure out what yeast would work really well. So, and then taking it all together with, and then not only that, but then it's also some people say, oh, I want to do an 8 Plato seltzer. Other people say, I want to do 25 Plato, and that all influences each other. It's,
yeah.
It's crazy, you know?
Yeah. It was like asking one basketball player to be the point guard and the forward and the center, you know, play all the positions at once. Like, you'd rather have like one just do one, but trying to get this one strain and the nutrients to do everything that makes people happy was quite an ask.
I remember I worked for a brewery about 5 years ago that, you know, that was kind of when like hard seltzer was really taking off and breweries were trying to kind of get in on it, and just all of like the troubleshooting and stuff and that they had to try to figure out. And so that having all of that information and you all doing all of that trials is so cool, because I, you know, 5 years ago, I know at least one brewery who literally would have killed to have that information and to have that yeast strain available.
Yeah. That's a pretty incredible amount of testing, and like my hat off to you.
Yeah.
How long did that take?
Oh God.
For you to like nail that down? Years?
Yeah, it was at least 6 months of actively doing it. We had one employee that almost did that full time, or like at least 3 days a week he was working on that. And one thing that was interesting is we weren't really, when we started that, it wasn't a, hey, we need to do this because other labs have something available. It was born out of people telling us that they were having issues just doing it on their side. It wasn't like that. Less an opportunity to sell something as more of a, hey, can we help people figure out this problem, which was a fun project because it was organically coming into something that we were able to help out with.
Yeah, I love that approach.
Yeah. And we just like wanted to create all these plots, you know, and we wanted to do it the right way. So every, you know, we did all these different sugar concentrations, all the different hardness of water, and then we did alkalinity testing, and we did the titratable acidity after fermentation, everything in triplicate so we can make these nice curves and everything. So that just took a long time. Yeah. Yeah.
It's impressive. We could definitely do a whole episode.
I did just receive my How to Brew Hard Seltzer book by Chris Colby in the mail this week. So, Rachel, we may have a hard seltzer episode coming up.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
I know. Yeah. I'll take a strain that will give me 25% alcohol for 15-gallon batch, and I'll dilute it. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do all that. Just take a normal strain. Well, let's, man, I could have questions for you guys all day. It could get ridiculous, but let's, cause we've been talking a lot about professional size pitches, but you know, let's talk about a little bit on the homebrew side, because I know you don't do a lot of homebrew stuff right now, but I know there are some options for it. One, that you could currently kind of take advantage, but two, that we're working on. I guess I'll just go ahead and say it. Why not? Currently, you know, for our listeners who might be close to Charlotte or South or North Carolina, or not even true, because this place will ship. But we're currently working with a local homebrew store in Charlotte to get small pitches of Jasper yeast in homebrew sizes in their shop that you can order from. That is in the works. But if someone, a homebrew, wanted to order some smaller size pitches, what are some options for that?
As far as homebrews, so there's a couple stores in Maryland. Maryland Homebrew carries our yeast strains, and Annapolis Homebrew. For people locally, we'll sell directly if they're in our area. If a homebrew calls us, say, hey, we live right down the road, so we'd love to pick something up. So we'll do that. But we're excited to have an outpost, hopefully, in your area, just as a way to reach out, hopefully do an event, the team down there. And homebrew is it's a great way to spread the word. And a lot of people that we meet say, hey, how come we haven't heard of you? And I think some of it is because we didn't start out doing homebrew. And a lot of people, ourselves included, started out doing homebrew. So in hindsight, it's a lot of labor, and it's tough to make that as profitable as, mm-hmm. you know, other ways of selling yeast. But it's something that we are always open to and are actively looking at new opportunities just to get the word out. Even that alone is worth it, so that people are aware that we are an option. A lot of, if 0.5% of homebrewers turn into professional brewers, that's 0.5% that would not know about us if we're not in any store. So yes. we're working yeah. on that. And there is, on the flip side, we're in the biggest homebrew distributor in the Netherlands, right, Jasper?
Yeah, yeah. Unibrew, for the international listeners that are in Europe, Unibrew in the Netherlands carries us as well. Yes. Yeah, so, and a lot of the strains that we sell in the United States, they have as well. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah, we're looking apart, or we're eventually Alternative Beverage is the big homebrew shop here in Charlotte. And they are, we're all working together right now to get some pitches in. So I think setting up some sort of fun day will be totally appropriate.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There's a lot of professional brewers that, in a pinch, I need a one bag of something specific, they'll order from a homebrew shop. So there's more professional brewers that are going into homebrew shops, or they're like, hey, I ran into something, I'm going to buy 20 homebrew packs of something so I can make a starter because this has got to go. So that makes a lot of sense that we didn't really think about until we heard after the fact that a lot of professional brewers have good relationships with homebrew stores.
Oh yeah. I go down there a lot for last minute things that I forgot to order, something messed up, whatever. So yeah, especially with our size, we have the smaller size half barrel system, so yeah, it's very true. Yeah,
and I have been a home brewer who goes into the homebrew shop looking for like dextrose or something, and they're like, nope, this brewery came in this morning and bought all of it because they were out.
It's probably me. Is there anything that you would want anyone to know specifically? I definitely, you know, how they can reach you, how to find your information about you, order yeast, all that jazz.
Well, I'll say, you know, one thing you're asking about, if they're like a Chico or a Weinspan lager, is it the same or is it from the same source? Yes, but one thing that makes a difference, just like the same recipe would be different, brewed by 10 different breweries, I think that the same yeast might be slightly different depending on who you purchase it from. And that can include the customer service, the process. It can include X factors like price, but also the yeast itself, how it was propagated, the viability, the care put into that. So we spend a lot of time making sure that we're thinking of everything. We're improving our process. So just like breweries are doing new things, we're always fine tuning what we do. And I think it's good to let breweries, home brewers and professionals know that, you know, we're doing everything we can to be great and to improve on what we're doing. And that they're getting high quality, viable, and just unique from a similar small business, which I think there should be a lot of good vibes between. That's what we'd like to hope to see.
Absolutely.
I can definitely attest to that. If you want to try their beer with their yeast, you can come to Pilot's Tap Room. It's all all made with it.
The agility that being a small local company like you all, just being able to do that and adjust and, you know, and work with customers on that stuff. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. So nothing is like mass produced, which is great because then everything is like fresh, you know, so we grow mm-hmm. every week to make sure that what we have and what we can sell is grown to order. And so when the customer sees it, it's very fresh, it's ready to go. And yeah, that's important. You know, we believe really in that.
So if people would like to get in touch with you, follow you on social media, where can they find you?
So we have a website, obviously, jasperyeast.com. I think our phone numbers are listed on there. Is that true, Travis?
And I don't get any weird calls. It's our cell phone numbers. But yeah, so and our email addresses are up there, info@jasperyeast. Everybody will read it. What else? And at jasperyeast.com on X, Instagram, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah, / Facebook. It's at Jasper Yeast, yeah, on all the social media. Yeah.
Okay, great. So everyone listening, you now have their personal cell phone numbers if you want to like text them. No kidding. Don't do that.
If you want to if you want a class on infrequent social media posting, check out our social media account.
We know how that goes.
Yeah. Travis and I both read the email, so you know, reach out to us, and we'll definitely same day get in, you know, send you an email back if people are interested to work with us. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Well, we definitely appreciate you joining us today. We very much appreciate you as our sponsor, and we welcome Jasper Yeast to the False Bottom Girls family. I really don't know if we can convey like how excited Rachel and I have been about this and about this partnership.
So
we're really looking forward to it. I know our listeners will be excited about it too. If you would like to find us on social media, we are at False Bottom Girls on Facebook and Instagram. You can visit our website, falsebottomgirls.com, and you can email us at falsebottomgirls@gmail.com. So thank you, Travis. Thank you, Jasper, so much for your time today. This has been False Bottom Girls,
and we make the brewing world go round.